League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Field deep, going back. Davis onto the warning track, looking up. It's gone, a home run. Ian Kinsler, two-run shot. Three batters after the resumption of play, the Tigers score three. First pitch from Cologne, swinging a fly ball right field deep, going back. Chisenhall looking up. It's gone, a home run. Miguel Cabrera, line drive into the right field seats, a three-run shot.
I think the way we came back offensively after the first delay, to be honest with you, Kinsler with a big home run, Miggy with a big home run. There was hits in between. Get a good night's sleep and come back tomorrow, weather permitting, we play Cleveland again.
Fakes the handoff, looks at the throw. He's got a man open to the flat, wide open. He's in. Khalid Hill, the hammer, scores for Michigan State. Looking, a lot of time, throws in the middle. He's got Asiasi. Touchdown, Michigan.
J.T. Barrett out of the shotgun. Option left side. Barrett keeping. Gets to the 10. Barrett to the 5. Barrett to the pylon. And Barrett, touchdown. Ran it down the left side. Got an excellent block from Curtis Samuel. Barrett gets the snap. Drops it as 14 to pass up the middle. Fires. Hits Samuel. 30, 35, 40. Samuel to the 50. He's wide open in Falcon territory to the 20. To the 10, Curtis Samuel. And into the end zone.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the extravaganza right here on The Ticket. We appreciate you being with us. We got an outstanding Thursday program lined up for you right here on ESPN 106.5. We are Toledo's sports leader. We got a lot of ground to cover, a lot of baseball you just heard there. The Tigers, of course, taking the Indians down again. They are not going down without a fight. If this is to be, it is going to be because of the will to win late in the season. Obviously, that's what it always is. But, you know, a team that watched the Cleveland Indians celebrate in their home or in their visiting dugout, but at their home, you understand the point, or in their clubhouse, that is, you understand the point. Watch them celebrate a division championship. All they've done is continued to plug away, push forward, and continue to try to grab that wild card spot. And it is not over yet. The Tigers are just one game behind the Orioles for the second wild card spot. The Blue Jays are, of course, one game above that. The Mariners are two back. The Astros are pretty much done at 3.5 back. So it is still there for the taking. They've got to take care of business, obviously. Detroit Tigers, as they have done for the last couple against the Indians. They got to get them one more time and then take care of the Braves. And, Kush, do they have to win out? Do you think they really are going to have to sweep their last five games of the year, which is what it would be if they take care of business tonight and then the Braves over the next three over the weekend? Do you think they really have to sweep in order to pass Baltimore and get there?
I mean, it would definitely help. I mean, it really would, because it's four, by the way, not five, where, you know, it's Thursday, so there's only four games left. Tigers obviously don't have the off day. You have to take advantage of the teams that you have in front of you, which is an Atlanta team that, despite their September and being on the road, so no DH, is still a bad team this year. And the Indians, if they ever get this one going, by the way, it was supposed to start 2 hours ago, but we've had all this rain, of course, in and out
the
area.
That's why I say tonight. Seriously.
They've already basically said, look, we want to get this game in. We are going to take as long as it takes to get this game in. On the grounds that if they don't, and the Tigers still need that for possibly making the wild card game,
yeah,
these two teams might have to reconvene on Monday, and I'll be the first to say, I'm going out on a limb here, Bob, nobody wants to have to do that.
No, and well, I mean, certainly the Tigers don't want to have to do that, but if the Tigers did have to do that, it actually might work out for them, because what are the Indians going to do? You know, on the verge of starting the playoffs, they're not going to mess up their rotation. They'll probably have a bullpen day or something as far as starting, as the Tigers are playing for
half,
you know,
or more of the lineup might be the Columbus AAA guys, kind of like we saw the other day.
Yeah. I mean, think about this. I don't want to get off into this. I mean, we got to see if they're going to play or not. But, you know, I think they'll probably play it no matter how late into the night it has to go. And I mean, the rain is going to stop sooner or later, for crying out loud, right? I mean, what
it's
is,
been
what
mostly
exactly...
a mist, but it's been constant up there at Comerica Park.
But what does the forecast say now for the entire Detroit region?
Pretty much
the hour by hour.
Hours in storms, over 50% chance, pretty much every hour the remainder of this day.
Okay, well...
And into the evening.
All right. Well, I mean, we'll see. I still think they're gonna do whatever they have to do to get it in.
I agree.
Jim, here's the trippy thing about that. As mentioned, if they are within a game of the wild card and they could tie, and I don't know what all the tiebreakers would be, for example, but if they needed this one to get in on that Monday, what you'd see is a huge problem that baseball would have to find a way to confront, and that is. Again, if you're the Indians, you don't want to mess anything up. You don't want to get anybody hurt in a game that is meaningless to you. You don't want to start, your game one starter, obviously, and you don't want to put a lot of your regulars in, that sort of thing,
right.
Like we just talked about. Might go bullpen day. I mean, the regular batters, maybe not as much. I mean, they might go ahead and do that. These are guys who are just going to, try to time things up. And
well, remember, I think of the lineup they used the other day, which would have been Tuesday's game.
Yeah.
In other words, that first game after they clinched, the only regulars in the lineup, I believe, were Santana and one other.
I know, but that's because they just had clinched the night before.
Right.
And that's standard. This would be different. This would be on their way into their divisional series. So I can see them using their bats, but they're not going to want to mess up their rotation in the order that they've put together from the pitching standpoint.
That might become a Cody Anderson start the game, give me 3-4 innings, and then we'll use
that's what I call the bullpen.
Yeah,
I know. But hold on a second. Bear with me. Let me get all this out here, okay? When I talk about what baseball is going to have to deal with is the competitive nature here. Because the Indians aren't going to want to mess up their pitching rotation, and they may go bullpen day. And that, of course, would be a huge advantage for the Tigers because they're not going to face, a starter, let alone a quality starter, because the Indians don't have to win that game. The Tigers do. And what do you think they'd be saying in Baltimore? And what do you think they'd be saying in Seattle? And what do you think they'd be saying all around baseball? Now you got an issue here where a team might get knocked out of the playoffs like the Orioles or the Mariners, depending on how this weekend shakes out, of course. But they might get knocked out by a Tigers team that had to play a makeup game against an Indians team that wasn't playing to win. And there would be all kinds of pressure on the Indians. No, you got to put out somebody who can beat them. This is the integrity of the game. You're going to have on your hands, potentially, you could have an integrity of the game issue if they have to end up playing this thing on Monday. If they can't get it in today, you're going to have a real issue here as people say the Indians have to go all out to win in order for the real, true, wild card team to emerge from this. They can't just mail it in from a pitching standpoint or whatever they do because of the implications of it. And if they don't, if they just go bullpen day and start, somebody weak and then just go two innings here, three innings here, and just try to work their way through, that would be their prerogative. They're the ones who are trying to set up their pitching rotation for the playoffs. That would be an extra game, or at least an out-of-order game. It wouldn't be 163, but it would be an out-of-order game rotation-wise that would really impact them. So it's there in the playoffs. So it's their right to do it, but baseball and, like I said, teams or fans and front office people and so on and so forth would be pretty livid in the other cities that might be impacted by a Tigers victory here. And by impacted, I mean knocked out of the wild card.
I'll actually give you the one that popped into my head as this afternoon has gone on, and they are still under a delay, which is now 2 hours because this is supposed to be a 1:10 game. Here's the one that in some dark corner office at Major League Baseball's headquarters that's really giving them headaches right now. So say that the Indians and Tigers would have to make up this game Monday. If they don't play today, have to make it up Monday. And if the Tigers would then win that, based on what happens the weekend, that would put them in, say, a tie for the second wild card with Baltimore. This is the nightmare scenario. You know why? Tuesday is the wild card game, period, for the AL. The AL's is Tuesday, the NL's is Wednesday. You can't really mess those. That's why, in theory, Monday is left open. Because, as you know, Bob, in baseball... they don't use tie-breaking percentages or run differentials. If you're tied and it means something, you play a game 163. That's how it's always been in baseball.
So they'd have to bump the Tuesday wild card game back to Wednesday.
And
they'd have to have them compete against one another.
And that would also mean if they do the AL wild card game, Toronto versus Baltimore or Detroit, then that team has less than 24 hours to turn around for their game one of the division. That's the nightmare scenario someone in a dark corner office in Major League Baseball is really worried about.
Yeah, that's a real conundrum that they're looking at right now. It could impact a lot of people in a lot of negative ways.
Because Monday is the off day for everybody, especially right? In case somebody anywhere needs that quote unquote game 163.
Exactly. And if that off day is filled up by a rainout day,
yes.
Which then the result of determines if a 163 is needed, then
right.
That 163 has to happen on Tuesday.
Yes.
Then that pushes both wild card games to being at the same time or on the same day.
TV's going to hate
Wednesday.
That.
TV would hate that. And then, as you say, the division series are supposed to start what then?
The AL division series game ones are a week from today.
All right, so that would be on Thursday.
Yes.
So they could technically have, whoever
that's
wins
the one thing we know. We just don't know where, for example. Indians
right.
will be playing game one of the division series Thursday, a week from today.
And as I look at the standings here, it's still unclear as to where that would be.
Right.
Obviously we have to see what happens over the weekend. I will say this, the Indians are, kind of not exactly, fighting very hard for this home field advantage, in the last couple against Detroit. Well, at least in the last one. As we said, they gave one to Detroit, that 12-0 lopsided win after they clinched the division, which was expected. But last night, they lost 6-3 as well. The Tigers are again playing for their playoff lives. They are doing exactly what needs to be done. The Indians, they need to kind of get back on the winning track too. You don't want to go into the playoffs. I don't think losing, let's say, four out of your last six or something silly like that. You don't want to go in there on a losing streak after, the high of clinching the division.
And you absolutely don't, by the way. And, however, it's very possible based on what we've seen in the 2 days, since the Indians clinch, which is, they're going to give some other guys playing time. They're not going to, push their starters as they try to get through, even though
sure.
I believe Tomlin's tomorrow and Bauer Saturday. You have, when it ever gets underway, Ryan Merritt today, and I think it's Adam Plutko or whoever on Sunday, for
right.
example. And by the way, a scenario where the game 163 fouled by a wild card game, that actually has already happened since they created this wild card game. Remember when the Indians played the Rays in that 2013
13,
cameo?
Yeah.
Tampa had to be the night before or two nights before in Texas for a game 163 that they won.
That's right. But they had that gap though for whatever reason. That makeup game was able to be played.
Yes.
Then this one would be played literally
right.
the next day.
Right, exactly.
So I don't know exactly how it's going to shake out. Obviously nobody does, but Mother Nature is not cooperating. I have an app on my phone, my smartphone. It's called Dark Sky. It's really a great, great app. It's very, very detailed, and it tells you what's happening up to the second. And you're right. I'm looking at the hour by hour. As a matter of fact, it just came across. I plugged it in for Detroit, and it says light rain stopping in 5 minutes. Great. Starting again 50 minutes later. I mean, they've got it down to the minute. It's a wonderful app. It's not a free app.
Nice.
It's a pay app, but it's worth it to me anyway. By the way, just since we're bringing it up, there's a flood watch now for Wayne, Michigan. it was on.
Well, if anybody's been reading the little articles and things posted online so far this morning, there were parts of Detroit that had some flooding, so it took guys both sides, Indians and Tigers, longer to even get to the ballpark for a game that was supposed to start 2 hours ago because
good
of
news,
that.
There's no
it's
rush.
A mess. Yes, there's no rush. It's a mess.
But it says light rain ending in 5 minutes, but then starting again 50 minutes later. So they're not going to get out there and try to do something and get their first inning in, because then you really jack things up
yep.
with the starters.
And that almost happened about an hour and a half ago. They were starting to pull off the tarp, and then somebody said, nope, put it back on.
Yeah, exactly right. And
it's one of those days, Bob.
And I'm looking at the hourly ahead, and it's exactly what you said. I've got an every 2 hour gap here, 5-7 and all the way through the mid morning, and it just says light rain consistently
yep.
through the entire forecast.
Yeah, it's a mess.
Oh my. So that's going to be a problem. So we're going to talk a little bit of baseball this afternoon right here on The Ticket. But also coming up, you heard in the montage there, college football. We do a lot of college football Thursday for the reasons for us anyway, because that's the day we get to talk Buckeye football with Paul Keels, the great voice of Ohio State football and basketball. So we're going to talk about the showdown, if we can call it that, with Rutgers. It'll be a 77-3 stomping, I have no doubt. Sorry about that, BG. Jim, did you ever look up what I asked you yesterday?
I could not find it.
I didn't realize
something like that's happened.
You talked to Mike Jinks earlier this
yes.
week on Tuesday, and the head coach at BG. And I completely forgot to ask about this and to ask you about this. And not that it's something you really want to ask about. 77-3 came into my head because that's what BG lost to Memphis by on Saturday. Memphis beat Bowling Green 77-3 3 weeks after Ohio State beat Bowling Green 77-10. And I wanted to know if any Division I program had ever given up 77 points or more in two games in the same season. You know, it's one of these Elias questions, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I don't work for Elias. And neither do you, but I asked you to find out anyway.
I could not dig anything up, which tells me no.
I doubt it's ever happened. I mean, that is just an astronomical amount of points. I mean, when you think about it, it's one of these things where I know the record for points ever scored in a college game is that Georgia Tech over Cumberland, 222-0 from back in like 1900-something.
1916. Is it 1916? But close to that, basically the same thing.
How do you know that off the top of
your head? I'm trying to start a search again, and that's actually the first thing that came up.
Oh, see, I just knew that one. I've always known that one because it's easy to remember, 222, you know, 222-0. It's just one of these silly things. You know, the Ramblin' Wreck from Georgia Tech over tiny Cumberland, which is like, you know, Ohio State playing, blah, 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 I don't know, Heidelberg, my alma mater, Division III school or something like that. But that's one game, and that kind of thing, I suppose, could happen. And maybe if they were in their first year and they played a whole bunch of teams like that, it could have happened. But when I say Division I schools, you know, Division I schools against other Division I schools, I wonder if anybody's ever had that happen twice in the same year. That's such an astronomical point.
And that is so an Elias Sports Bureau kind of question, but based on some of the things I tried to look up yesterday and I'm looking up again now, I'm leaning towards no, that never happened, because I can't seem to find anything as of right now. That sounds like it'd be so rare. By the way, funny side note, you brought up the 222-0 game that we were just talking about. I love this little blur in part of the description of that game. Georgia Tech won under the coaching of John Heisman, who wanted revenge after an embarrassing 22-0 loss earlier that year to a Cumberland baseball team that he suspected of having used pro players posing as students. Ah, sports 100 years ago. I love it.
That is funny. That is, a long time ago, Jim, I read something about that game. And maybe I just read like the whole Wikipedia account or something of it. But, it is really amazing, you know, cause you're wondering, why did you keep scoring? 222 points. I mean, what did you do? Did they just like lay down every time there was a snap and let you run through and score and then just give you the ball back? How many possessions do you need for 222 points? Think about that for a moment. If touchdowns come 6 points at a time, which I think they did even back then, what are we talking about here? 26-point touchdowns gives you what? 120 points, right?
Well, let's see. 222 divided by 6 is 37.
20 of them gives you 120 points. They had 222 points. So that means they would have had to score 30. Now, you just, you know, you did the math on the calculator there. I was just going to play with this a minute. But over 30 touchdowns, that means you have to have 30-some possessions. How do you even have time? I mean, did they play untimed in those days? Was there no clock? Was it like baseball, you know, where it's no clock? And if so, why didn't they just, like, walk away after it was 120-0? I mean, it's just bizarre that happened. I read something about it years ago, but it's been too long for me to recall now. All right, anyway. All of that was a very roundabout way of talking about the fact that Ohio State is probably going to put one of those kind of hurts on Rutgers on Saturday. So we'll talk to Paul Keels about it at 4:05. But coming up in about 10 minutes, we're going to talk about a much better college football game coming up on Saturday. It won't be the best game of the day, but number 8, Wisconsin, at number 4, Michigan, will be a great game. The best game of the day is clearly going to be Louisville at Clemson in Death Valley. Lamar Jackson, 25 touchdowns in 4 games against Deshaun Watson, the human highlight film that he is. It is going to be really something to watch. But Michigan is hosting Wisconsin in the second Big Ten game of the season. They had Penn State last week for the Wolverines, and it'll be a showdown, no question about it. Jim Harbaugh's biggest test, obviously, here to start this 4-0 number 4 ranked season. All right, let's go to the phones. We got some people who want to talk about the Major League Baseball nightmare scenarios. Charlie in Deschler. Charlie, hey, thanks for calling. You're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hey, I was sitting on hold here. I remember that Cumberland-Georgia Tech game, and one of the things I remember reading about as a kid was that it got so bad that Cumberland started kicking off to Georgia Tech after they scored.
So Cumberland started kicking off to Tech. Why? Because they didn't want to run offense?
I have no idea. They were just getting smashed. That's all I remember. But for some reason, they started kicking off in the reverse order. So Georgia Tech could get the ball back.
Yeah, that kind of thing would happen, I guess. That's kind of the point that I was making. Yeah. You know, how do you even have time in a 48-minute or a 60-minute football game, whatever they played at that time, to possess the ball 37 times to score 37 touchdowns? You know what I mean? It's just it would have to be something crazy like you just said. So Georgia Tech scores, and Cumberland kicks the ball back to Georgia Tech. They score again. They kick the ball back to Georgia Tech, and you just repeat ad nauseum until it's 222-0, I suppose. It's just crazy.
Yeah, with something really bad like that. But as far as doomsday scenario goes, you'll appreciate this one. Mm-hmm. The Tigers end up needing the game 162, right? But then Toronto and Baltimore end up tied, only one game ahead of Detroit. Detroit wins that 162, and now you got a three-way tie for the wild card. Ooh. After playing your makeup day.
Oh, what would they do? What do baseball's rules say about that?
Oh, I kind of know the answer to this, but I'm going to fumble it a little bit because I read an article maybe earlier in the week, guys, because they were thinking, what happens if the NL wild card, which is really only three teams right now, Giants, Mets, Cardinals, what if they all finish tied?
Yeah.
Two of them would play each other. The winner would go straight to a wild card game. The loser would play the other leftover, and that encompasses 2 days. So that's kind of what you're saying. And that's
Wait. Do that again. Two teams play each other. The one that doesn't play waits in the wild card game for the loser of the other game?
No,
said the loser plays.
No, neither would be in the wild card. None of the three would be in the wild card game in that scenario.
Right.
Two would have to play each other.
Okay.
The winner of that first game plays the other team that didn't play.
Okay, so you just misspoke there when you said the loser. You said they wait for the loser. Okay.
Yes. So you'd have to, it's two extra game, quote unquote, 163s encompassing 2 days, then you get to the wild card game.
Wow. Now throw that in, because that's not nearly as much of a nightmare as Charlie just brought up.
Right.
Charlie's bringing up the same type of scenario in the American League with the rainout game.
Monday
made
already
up on
occupied.
Monday. So now you're talking about three after the rainout game. Now you got a three-way tie, so you got to play one game between two of them. And I don't know, what do they do? Draw straws?
I have no idea how they figure this out. Maybe I could find the article I read the other day, because they were saying, let's root for chaos so we get this in the NL. That's where this was pointed out.
But this could be even worse in the American League. So, you know, then they'd have to, as you say, you know, let's say it would be Detroit against Baltimore in the tiebreaker game, and then the winner of that plays. I guess they would have to do it with a league winning percentage, maybe, the team that doesn't have to play the first elimination game of the three that are tied, the three teams that are tied, the team that doesn't have to play the first elimination game would be the one that maybe has the best record within the American League. Something to give them
here
an
we
edge
go.
This
where
is they
from,
don't have to play.
This is from David Schoenfield of ESPN 2 days ago.
Right.
And I'm just going to read it, because if I skip over it, part of it won't make sense.
All right, go ahead.
So it's Mets, Giants, Cardinals. If all finish tied, teams are given A, B, and C designations. And it's not even spelling out how the designations are determined, by the way. Cardinals and Mets would both here it is. Cardinals, Mets both won their season series over the Giants. So Giants are C. Mets and Cardinals.
Okay, so there's your tiebreaker.
Right.
Season series against one another.
Right, but this just goes to designations. You don't get to go forward anyway. You still have to play the extra games, because that's how baseball does things. So then it goes on to say Mets and Cardinals split, and the tiebreaker there is an interdivision record goes to Cardinals. So Cardinals A, Mets B, Giants C. So what would happen is Cardinals-Mets would play in St. Louis Monday, October 3rd. Winner of that game would then host the actual wild card game. That's the Wednesday game.
Wait. Who are the A, B, and C in that scenario?
See how convoluted it already is? In this scenario, A would be St. Louis, B would be the Mets,
okay.
C would be the Giants.
Okay, so the Giants are automatically declared to be a wild card team.
Nope. Not at all.
You just said the winner of the Mets and Cardinals would play the Giants, and that team is already in the wild card game.
The winner of the St. Louis, in this scenario, the winner of St. Louis Mets, which would be in St. Louis Monday.
Yeah.
That winner would travel to San Francisco Tuesday, October 4th.
Right.
While the winner goes straight to the actual wild card game, which would be the 5th. So then you have San Francisco against the loser for the second wild card on October 4th.
Okay.
Well, I know that makes no sense, does it?
No, it does. It does when you said it the second time.
Okay.
You didn't say it that way the first time.
My bad.
You explained, the way you explained it was the other team is already in the wild card game. They're automatically in the wild card game. So in the scenario you just drew up, San Francisco would have to wait to host the loser of the first wild card, of the first tiebreaker game.
Right.
In San Francisco.
Right.
Whereas the winner would then what? Wait for the winner of that San Francisco and loser game.
Yes.
Okay. So we have essentially two tiebreaker games and then a wild card game, and that pushes the division series back to probably what? By at least three or
four. Well, since they're not dealing with the rain and the makeup over there on the NL side, they would actually be able to do it fine. Plus, the NL wild card game is Wednesday, which technically allows them 2 days for these tiebreaker games.
The American League only gets one. I mean, if the same scenario played out in the American League, if the Tigers needed to
it's
play
a nightmare,
a rainout
and somebody
game,
at MLB offices is jumping off the roof.
If they, yeah, you're right. If the Tigers end up needing to play Monday against the Indians just to get into this mix, to get into the wild
they'll
card
have
game,
no choice but to move the AL wild card game back. They'll have no choice at that
point.
Well,
not just that, but more. You'd have to move that back by 2 days if the goofball scenario that Charlie just threw at us and the David Schoenfield, was kind of talking about in the NL side. But if they had to do that, they'd play the rainout game against the Indians Monday,
right?
And then Tuesday, A and B, if in this scenario again, if the Blue Jays and Orioles tie, the A and B would play on Tuesday. Then on Wednesday, the loser of A and B would play C on Wednesday, and then after whoever wins that game, they would play the winner from A and B on Thursday. You wouldn't be playing the wild card game until Friday at the earliest.
No, Thursday would be in that scenario would have to be the wild card game for the AL. Problem is that moves game one of the division series
on. Stop, Jim. You're totally going into another direction here, into the division. So I don't care about that now. Why did you say it would be Thursday? I just laid everything out. You'd have Monday as the rainout game, right?
Right.
That means Tuesday would be the A and B game.
Right.
That means Wednesday would be the loser of A and B versus C game.
Correct.
Then Thursday would be the winner of that game against the team that had won the original game from the AB game. That means you're not playing the wild card until Friday.
No, that
would be the
Thursday
wild card.
Thursday would
game.
Be the actual wild
okay,
card
now,
game.
Now,
then.
Now, all right, there, I talked myself out of it. Okay.
See, just trying to read it is giving us all headaches.
I'm not reading. I'm just going. I don't have the article you have in front of you. I'm just doing this by what you said. So I'm trying to process.
Might as well be reading the NBA CBA at this point.
Yeah, you're right. It is crazy. So, yeah, all of that. Charlie, man, you're killing us because you just added another layer of misery to what, and all of it being brought on by Mother Nature, potentially.
Well, you'll appreciate this, the way you explained it. The A or B team actually gets a two-game shot to make it into the wild card game. So the C team kind of gets only one shot, while the other two teams get two shots to win the first or the second game.
That
seems
is true.
Like they get a real advantage.
Well, it depends on how you look at it, because one way to look at it is they have two shots, but the other way to look at it is because they have to play two games. The C has the advantage of only having to play one game. You know, it's one game win and you're in.
And the C would be home in that case too.
Exactly. I mean, you're right when you say you got two shots at it. If you lose the A-B matchup, well, now we got to go to play the C team, and now it's for both of us, it's win or you're done. It's win or go home. The C team didn't have to play that first one to have to get to a second one, and then obviously the two surviving teams have to play another win or go home game in the actual wild card. It is a nutty system.
You're right. Well, you guys are correct. Sometimes you just got to get in to give yourself a chance to win,
yeah.
Right?
That's exactly right. You know what? And you just got to do what you got to do and let the chips fall where they may. And then you know what happens? Then you win. Let's say you're the Tigers and all of this happens and you got to go through the rain out, and then you got to do all of this nonsense and win a game and then win a wild card game, and then you go on to win the World Series and you got the greatest story in the history of baseball.
Exactly. Thanks for your time, guys.
Thanks, Charlie. We appreciate the phone call. All right. I don't know if we have time to get to Mike. Mike, I apologize, but I got to get a timeout here because we got to get to talking college football with Nick Baumgartner. Ah, what the hell? Let's bring Mike on the radio. Mike, tell Nick to hang on for a minute. Let's bring Mike in. He waited that long to talk about the wild card. Let's bring him in. Hey, Mike, go ahead, sir.
How's it going? Yeah. Honestly, I think that if the Tigers got to win to get in on Monday, because it looks like it's going to get rained out, I don't see how Orioles or what is it, Seattle,
Well, it's Toronto. Toronto and Baltimore. Toronto and Baltimore are ahead of the Tigers and the Mariners.
Okay. I don't see how either of those can complain about anything, because they should have just won more games, hands down. I mean, talking about the integrity of the game and everything, I don't see how that has anything to do with what the Indians are going to do, if they're going to have a bullpen game or, you know,
well, you know, here's the thing, you know, and we see this from time to time in other sports too. Mike, thanks for the phone call. We see this from time to time. If one team has already clinched their division, for example, like in basketball, okay, and maybe even clinched their seeding and they know where they're going to be, and they rest their starters for a couple of games down the stretch, and they happen to be playing somebody else that's fighting for a spot in the playoffs, right? And then they're let's say it's the Spurs, and they're sitting Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker, and Kawhi Leonard, and so on and so forth, and they're just putting a triple-A club, like just to kind of borrow the phrase that we talked about before with the Indians. And they're playing a team that another team needs to lose. They need that team to lose so for them to make the playoffs. And they're looking at the Spurs saying, man, this isn't even right. They're not even trying to beat the team that we need to lose. In the NFL, that has happened too. Should the Colts sit Peyton Manning for the season-ending game because they're already 13-1?
That used to be a yearly conversation.
Exactly. And then, you know, and the question is, of course, hey, they're doing it for the health of their guys and to prepare for the playoffs, but for everybody else, it's, yeah, but they're playing the, and I'll just pick something, they're playing the Bengals, and the Bengals are 8-8, and they're, you know, in a tie for the last wild card spot or for the wild card spot in the AFC. And, you know, it's not fair that the Bengals are going to have an advantage here playing the Colts without Peyton Manning, while the other team that the Bengals are competing with for that spot has to play a team at full strength. The integrity of the game thing. Every team should try to win every game as hard as they can with their best players. That's just a common routine argument and debate and discussion in sports when tiebreakers are considered down the stretch in the season. And that's all that would be happening here. I don't think anybody would really be, you know, losing, you know, their job over something like this, but, you know, people would complain because that's what fans do. This is sports. And, if the Indians played a less than stellar lineup against, the Tigers in a potential rainout on Monday, and that led to the Tigers getting an easier victory, and that knocked Baltimore or Toronto out, for example, yes, the folks in Toronto and Baltimore, you're right. To your point, Mike and Toledo, they should have just won more games. But that's always the answer. Win more than the other guys, and then you don't have this problem. But when it comes down to you've won the same amount as the other guys, and then you lose a tiebreaker based on something silly like this, that's when they're going to complain. Really good stuff. Hey, we got to talk college football coming up. Nick Baumgartner from MLive.com is going to break down Michigan hosting Wisconsin, a battle of top 10 teams. And you know what that brings to mind? Ohio State as well. They take on Rutgers, and that takes me to the Ohio State store, the Buckeye store to be precise, and more. The Buckeye store and more, the College and Pro Superstore in Sylvania, 5700 Monroe, Starlight Plaza. Get yourself on out to the Buckeye store and more because you have got tremendous opportunities to save money. First of all, everything in the store is 10% off. That's right, store-wide 10% savings and 50 to 75% off select items in the mornings for doorbuster sales. That's at the Buckeye Store and More, where you will find hundreds of new Nike products in stock and hundreds more products arriving daily at the largest store in Ohio dedicated to Buckeye gear. But if you're not a Buckeye fan, fear not. Michigan, Notre Dame, Michigan State, Toledo, Bowling Green, and Detroit Tigers fan zones await inside for any and every need that you have for your team. The Buckeye Store and More. In Sylvania, 5700 Monroe, the Buckeye Store and more, the College and Pro Superstore.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
That is indeed who we are and where we are as we continue 866-240-1065 on the ticket. And we now welcome Nick Baumgartner back to our program. Nick covers the Michigan Wolverines for MLive.com and does an outstanding job of it. Nick, welcome back, man. How are you?
Good, Bob. How are you?
I am outstanding. Thank you. Appreciate you spending some time with us. Finally, a real test for the Michigan Wolverines. You know, there was an interesting commentary made by Paul Feinbaum, who covers college football, obviously, for ESPN. I'm sure you're familiar. And he covers the SEC particularly and is a big-time SEC homer. But he was given a lot of love a couple of weeks ago. Excuse me. Still battling a cough. Apologies. He had to stop there.
No problem.
He was very complimentary, however, about 2 weeks ago of the Big Ten. And, you know, everybody, it was after a particular weekend in which the Big Ten was dominating other Power Five schools and getting wins. The SEC was not doing as well, et cetera. And he talked about the Big Ten East being the real beast. and he was really complimentary of the Buckeyes and the the Spartans, but not so much the Michigan Wolverines. And Michigan fans were apparently not happy because they called him up to say so, and he called Michigan fans the biggest bunch of whiny, sniveling cowards or something like that in football. He said the reason why he wasn't high on Michigan because at that point they hadn't been tested. There was Hawaii and there was UCF and there was Colorado on the schedule at the time, and they were trailing Colorado by 14 at one point, so he just hadn't seen enough of Michigan to really give them the same kind of love. I think it was a pretty fair characterization. They did look really good against some really bad teams for the most part. Last week's win over Penn State, though, might have been the kind of statement game that says, no, we're not just paper Tigers here. We are legitimate. They took it to the Nittany Lions, and that's exactly what they needed as far as a test, I would imagine, before this real showdown on Saturday against the Badgers.
Yeah, I mean, I would start out, I guess, with that, with Paul Feinbaum's obviously in radio, and he's had plenty of Jim Harbaugh fodder. I think he knows that if he takes a shot at Michigan, his ratings are going to go up, and that's exactly what happened. So there's that. But no, I mean, yeah, that's a fair argument to make.
But it was a fair shot, though. I mean, he actually didn't disparage Michigan until the fans started coming after him.
Right. And, yeah, that's whiny, totally fair, you know? As well.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's a fair characterization or whatever to make at the time, of course. But you know, a week removed, I think there's two things, like you said, Bob. You know, they dismantled a Big Ten opponent and. In quick and short order and just, you know, frankly embarrassed Penn State. And then I think you look at the other part of it too. Colorado, who Michigan still beat by 17, won at Outset. So at Oregon. So, you know, maybe that win looks a little bit better. I'm not sure, but you know, really again, this Wisconsin game is the big one, you know, and this is where we're going to find out. I think if this team is for real, if this team can really make a run at the Big Ten or if they were simply overvalued. I think we'll get to know that on Saturday.
Yeah, the Badgers are 4-0, and they are extraordinarily strong, as we know, and coming off of that big win last week. So what do you see happening here? I mean, are the Wolverines ready for this challenge? You know, last year, they had their opportunity. In fact, of course, we talked about it many times since then. They had Michigan State beat, and then, of course, the punt snap, snafu. But that was the real big moment, and then Ohio State was the other big moment, and they fell short in both of those. This is the first real big moment, two top 10 teams going at one another. Are they more prepared this time around?
Yeah, I think so. In this matchup, I do. I think that Michigan's defense is for real. I think that's a good unit, one of the better ones in the country. And I look at what Wisconsin does offensively, and I know that the freshman quarterback Alex Hornibrook had some really nice throws on third down against Michigan State. But I also know that Michigan State's secondary is not very good. I think that's been overrated for a little while now. And I know that on the flip side, Tyler O'Connor played pretty poorly. So I'm still kind of walking the line of, is Wisconsin really this monster, or did Michigan State have a bad day, or was Michigan State overvalued? I think this is a good matchup for Michigan, especially being at home. I think it's going to be tough for either team to run the football. And the difference in those games are, do you have a quarterback? It's either one of two things. It's, do you have a quarterback who can make the necessary throws when they're there to secure a win for you, and do you have an X factor? And Michigan's X factor is the X factor that they'll have every week, and it's Jabril Peppers. I mean, their special teams with the returns and everything else, their field position, it's been completely off the charts. They haven't turned the ball over much. With a low possession game like this should be, I think this favors Michigan, especially with it being at home. And I think this is going to be a close game, be a good game, but I do think Michigan gets a win Saturday.
So, Nick, you wrote on MLive.com, as we try to tell everybody to go follow you there, follow you on Twitter, of course, but to read you on MLive.com, you wrote about Jabril Peppers changing the way Jim Harbaugh runs plays and calls plays at Michigan. Explain what that means.
Yeah, Harbaugh had given an example this morning about how they installed something yesterday and saw, you know, basically that they've been running for a decade. It was a pass play, and they had Peppers in as a running back. And, you know, he said that Peppers went through the first part of his assignment, which was to block and a blitz pickup, but then, which is usually where the job for the running back stops, because that's usually more than enough of a task. He managed to do that, and then actually got out and ran a route, and they threw him the ball. It sounded like the route was kind of a last resort valve, and he made a play on it that he said he's never had a back do. So it was one of those things where, you know, he said, here's a play that we've been running for 10 years. We do it the same way every time, and it's always kind of worked for us. And then he comes in and does it and shows us something different, and we got to change it because he is, you know, he's a special athlete. He's maybe pound for pound the best athlete in the country. And he's probably certainly the most versatile football player, I would say. Well, you know, I mean, Christian McCaffrey, I guess, maybe has an argument, but he can't play defense. So maybe that's the only guy that can do what he can do. So, you know, he's a difference-making talent and a guy that when everything else is equal, he's the type of talent that can win you a football game. And that's where I look at this kind of matchup here, where I say that, you know, more often than not, in the punt game, in a specialty package on offense, whatever it may be, he is the guy who's the difference for Michigan that Wisconsin cannot match up with or can't replicate. They don't have Jabril Peppers. They don't have their own version of him. So I think he ends up being a difference in a lot of these games, especially when similar talents are kind of on the field.
We're talking to Nick Baumgartner, who covers the Wolverines for MLive.com. Follow him at Nick Baumgartner on Twitter as well. Forgetting about this particular game against Wisconsin for a moment, just looking, you know, bigger picture here, and this kind of seems to come around every time you have this sort of a special athlete. You know, you go back and you say, will they use him on offense on a regular basis? How much time? Because back when Charles Woodson, of course, was winning the Heisman Trophy in 1997, he was the best defensive player in college, an unbelievable shutdown corner, big hitter, equally proficient against the run and pass. But, hey, by the way, let's throw him the football. Let's have him return punts. He was such a special athlete. People wanted to see him do it on both sides of the ball, and some of that contributed to his Heisman. So is Jabril Peppers being thought of in that way, in a way where it's not just, hey, I put a play in for him and he made a play on it today? Great. But are we talking about a relatively consistent thing here where a few plays every game where he may end up on the offensive side of the ball?
Yeah, he'll be on offense for a handful of plays, I would say, in every big game they have the rest of the way. I think it's both. I think they'll give him the ball. You know, there were times in that Ohio State game last year before it got out of hand that they were just lining him up as a deep setback and just handing him the ball off on blast plays. I mean, he was just a regular contributor on offense. So I think he'll continue to be sprinkled in, but the difference there and the reason why I think you can't put him in that separate category of what Woodson was is that Jabril's got to do it in the big game. He's got to make some explosive play or some game-changing play or something that wins them a game in a big game against a big-time opponent, and to date, he hasn't really done that. He had a really nice game against Michigan State that got overshadowed last year because of the punt thing, but in all these other big games, I mean, he's got to be the guy who comes in and does one of these things that puts you over the top, and that's what probably separates him from being, you know, this really dynamic, unique football player. And then, you know, if you add that other part, then maybe he's in conversations for national awards. But I think he still needs to be a guy who does that.
I wasn't really suggesting, Nick, that he could win the Heisman or something the way Woodson did. I'm just talking about how much they're going to use him on offense, how much more than what they did last year. I guess I just mean, you know, because we are talking about what might be the most versatile talent in the country. And he's, you know, it's got to be more than just, hey, we put him in to be a blocking back, but he's supposed to slip out into a route after that. And normally it's not going to go to him, and we don't expect him to make a play, but he did. So I just wonder if that isn't going to weigh on Jim Harbaugh and say, geez. Because I guess that was the point of your article, he changes the way Harbaugh thinks now about the kind of plays he can run because this guy does things that, quite frankly, most college football players are just simply unable to do.
Yeah, I think that a combination of things is, I mean, he's going to play a lot on offense. I think he'll play about 100 snaps on Saturday altogether. You know, he never leaves the field on defense. He's still out there on all the kick teams. And I wouldn't surprise me to see him get 10 to 15 snaps on offense, depending on how the game goes. So, you know, yeah, I mean, Harbaugh said it before. If they decided one day to make Jabril Peppers a running back, he'd probably be their best running back. If they decided one day to make him a receiver, he'd probably be their best receiver. They keep him in this role where he kind of goes all over the place, and he's one of these guys who can kind of grab a concept really quickly and put it together on the field. So all of that coupled with the fact that you kind of want to make as much hay with a guy when you got him, and I don't think they're going to have him for much longer after this year. Jabril seems cool with it, so I think they're going to play him a lot. I think they're going to go as many snaps as he can handle, just about every week, I would say, for the rest of the year. And unless something changes where he starts looking exhausted, then I don't think that changes.
Is the Harbaugh offense in perfect balance right now? I mean, it was obviously very, very pass-heavy early on, and they got the running game going big time against Penn State as well with Evion Smith. It's going to be a two-pronged attack. Is it a 50-50, a 60-40, a 70-30? How do you think they bring that ratio against the Badgers?
Well, I think that they'd probably like it to be as balanced as possible. What we need to see, though, is Wilton State make throws against a real defense, and we haven't seen that yet. That's still a really big question. You know, can he do Can he make throws and make plays? You know, you're not asking for the world. You're probably, again, in his perfect world, it'd probably be 55-45 run. But at the same time, you're going to need him to make throws when necessary. And that's the big question. So I would think that they'd want to be balanced, but I'm not sure if they're totally comfortable with the competency level on either side yet. If it's, we're completely comfortable with passing game, just as we are with the run game, you know, you got to see what Wilton Spate does against a real defense. And he'll certainly get that test this week. And that'll be a big, deciding factor, I suppose, and where the season goes.
Yeah, no question about it. We're talking with Nick Baumgartner of MLive.com covering the Wolverines. So you already said it in your first comment that the Michigan is going to win this game. You really feel confident about that. What kind of a score are you looking at?
I think it'll be close. You know, I certainly could see Wisconsin winning it, but I think the spread was 10.5. I don't think it'll be that. I picked 24-20, something like that. I think it'll be a low possession game. You know, both teams are two of the slowest moving teams in terms of plays per minute and all that in the country. So I think they'll probably both try to keep the thing, you know, both try to chew clock and basically whatever quarterback makes the most throws and whoever gets that big boost on special teams, I think wins the football game. And I think that Michigan's more equipped to do that, especially being at home. And, I think Michigan wins in a good, close, hard-nosed football game. You know, if you're a fan of old-school football, this will be,
be a good one
for you.
Yeah. You're going to get plenty of it, no question about it. Lots of defense, and it's going to be intense. It's going to be a proverbial crowbar bowl. Hey, last thing, Nick, before you go. That's not the only game involving top 10 teams, obviously. Who do you like in the showdown in Death Valley between Lamar Jackson and the Louisville Cardinals and Deshaun Watson, the Clemson Tigers, two of the most dynamic playmakers in college football? It's been Lamar Jackson's year thus far. He is the Heisman Trophy winner if you ended it right now. Who wins on Saturday?
I like Lamar Jackson. And not just, you know, obviously he's been fantastic. I've seen him now twice when I've had chances to watch full games of him, and he's just out of this world. And so is Deshaun Watson, obviously. But I think that Louisville has more than just Lamar Jackson. They seem to have other really nice pieces around him. Their offense is outstanding. I like Louisville. I think Louisville wins it. And I think Lamar Jackson keeps the train rolling. That guy has been amazing. I think what, he's got 25 touchdowns in 4 weeks or something ridiculous.
Yeah, that's
I think I read that Michigan is the only team in the country with 28 that has scored more touchdowns than Lamar Jackson has by himself. So that's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive stat.
That is remarkable. Yeah, and I tend to lean that way too. I really think they're a very special team right now, and they are on their way to a potential playoff berth. But they are in Death Valley, and the Clemson Tigers are very, very good. I think they've underperformed in the early part of the season, especially after how great they were last year and making it to the playoff and everything else. But I think it's going to be a great challenge, and it'll be a great game. And so will Wisconsin at Michigan. Nick Baumgartner of MLive.com. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
All right, Bob. Take care.
You too. Thanks very much. All right. It's coming up on 4:00. That means we've got a top of the hour Sports Center coming. How about I do something fun for you, as we are just a couple of days from October, and you know that means Halloween season. If you would like to go to the Haunted Hydro in Fremont, one of the great scare attractions that you're going to find in all of Northwest Ohio, if you want to go to Fremont and check out the Haunted Hydro, I got a pair of tickets for you. All you got to do to claim them is be the 10th caller at 866-240-1065 right now as we head into Sports Center on ESPN 106.5.
Fly ball, left field, deep, going back, Davis, onto the warning track, looking up, it's gone, a home run! Ian Kinsler, two-run shot, three batters after the resumption of play, the Tigers score three. First pitch from Cologne, swinging a fly ball, right field, deep, going back, Chisenhall, looking up, it's gone, a home run! Miguel Cabrera, line drive into the right field seats, a three-run shot.
I think the way we came back offensively after the first delay, to be honest with you, Kinsler with a big home run, Miggy with a big home run. There was hits in between. Get a good night's sleep and come back tomorrow. Weather permitting, we play Cleveland again.
Fakes the handoff, looks at the throw. He's got a man open to the flat. Wide open. He's in. Khalid Hill, the hammer. Scores for Michigan. Fake looking. A lot of time. Throws in the middle. He's got Asiasi. Touchdown, Michigan.
JT Barrett out of the shotgun. Option left side. Barrett keeping. Gets to the 10. Barrett to the 5. Barrett to the pylon. And Barrett, touchdown. Ran it down the left side. Got an excellent block from Curtis Samuel. Barrett gets the snap. Drops it as 14 to pass up the middle. Fires. Hit Samuel. 30, 35, 40. Samuel to the 50. He's wide open in Falcon territory to the 20. To the 10, Curtis Samuel, and into the end zone.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed. Hour number two of the extravaganza underway. College football on the mind for all kinds of reasons. Hey, by the way, congratulations to Ryan. Am I saying that right? Oh, it's Ryan with an I. I've never seen Ryan with an I before. How about that? You know, isn't that funny? If you put a B in front of that, it's no problem. Brian is almost always with an I, occasionally with a Y. Ryan, I've never seen with an I before. So it's Ryan Barton of Toledo, who's going to the Haunted Hydro in Fremont. That was the 10th caller that we had last hour. We may do that again this hour. That was so much fun. We'll see if we can get another unique name spelling for a winner this hour. We got lots of tickets to be given away to the Haunted Hydro in Fremont this Halloween season. So congratulations to Ryan with an I of Toledo. Lots of college football conversation today for the obvious reasons. We have Ohio State and Rutgers coming up on Saturday after a bye week. They got to be just champing at the bit, trying to get back out on the field. They'll be at the Horseshoe. Michigan, of course, is taking on Wisconsin in a top 10 battle. Number 8, Wisconsin at number 4, Michigan. Great conversation with Nick Baumgartner. We're waiting for a conversation with Paul Keels, who is, of course, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, and that'll be coming up next. You agree, Jim Cushlin, with the summary there by Mr. Baumgartner? He said it'll be close, but he didn't seem to think that the outcome is going to be in doubt. Is this one of those, hey, two really good teams? So if you got two really good teams and no other, you know, determining factor, that maybe this is when you do what Bill Clark says and you stay with the home team.
It could very well be. I mean, both of these teams right now are top 10 for a reason. It should be an absolute dandy of a football game. There's almost no doubt about that. But, yeah, as of right now, I can buy into what he was saying.
Yeah, I think so, too. And it's going to be a great, great game in the Big Ten on Saturday. No question about that. Wisconsin at Michigan at the Big House. All right. Looks like we do have Paul Keels on the line now. This is also going to be a big game, but for different kinds of reasons. Probably not as competitive of a game as Wisconsin and Michigan is going to be, but it's going to be big for Buckeye fans because, A, the Buckeyes are fighting for a spot in the playoff. They are number 2 in the country right now behind only Alabama. And, B, they had a week off. And that means Buckeye fans are hungry, and I would imagine the Buckeye players are too, and they want to take it out and feast on Rutgers at the Horseshoe on Saturday. Paul Keels is the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, joining us once again for his weekly conversation on all things Scarlet and Gray right here on The Ticket. Mr. Keels, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
Good, and apologies for being a little late. It's media day for the basketball team, and I was talking with the head basketball coach for a couple of minutes, so
well,
forgive me for being a little late.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a great story, but we're going to have to dock your pay for that one, you understand. Just as he sits there thinking, wait a minute, they're supposed to pay me for this? well, thanks for the time. You know, that bye, that is never fun for Buckeye fans. I got to tell you, you know, that week off feels like an eternity when you're playing as well as they were, when you're coming off of the win over Oklahoma in Norman. You know, you're just flying high and you just can't wait to see them get back out again. I really feel like it's been far more than just a week off that the Buckeyes have had.
Well, and you know, it's not a week off. Basically for them, it's 3 days off. They did practice during the week. They had Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off. And then with all of that working out, it was a plus 1 week this week going into it. But, you know, I think that the timing was good and you never can control when the bye is. But, you know, with the delay for the Oklahoma game, it was, you know, 7 a.m. Sunday morning before the team got back after that game. So it was good that they had Sunday and Monday that following week to kind of recycle a little bit. But, you know, what it did, Bob, is it gave some of the players that have played a lot, like Noah Brown, an opportunity to physically rest, give them a chance to get a lot more reps for a lot of the younger players that haven't been out there, but also take care of some maintenance, some fundamentals, some self-scouting. And the self-scouting and avoiding tendencies really crucial going into a game where your next opponent used to be an assistant coach at Ohio State. So it's, you know, you can never plan when the bye is. You know, there's no control, but you know, teams try, and Ohio State certainly tried to make the most out of it that they could.
Yeah, no question about it. And by the way, the week off part, I know the players don't have a week off. They have a couple of days, as you point out, but there was no football last Saturday. That's the week off for the fans.
Yeah.
For those of us who want to see them every week, that's what hurts so much. Let's talk, if we can, and I know you talked with Jim a little bit last week about it, but since it was the last time they played, let's just go back to Norman for a moment and, again, kind of recall what we learned about this team from that time. And the, I think, of course, course, the most important thing after four touchdowns from Noah Brown is that there is a number one receiver on this team. There is a game breaker. There's a guy who can separate himself from others, which was kind of a question coming into the season and through the first couple of weeks. But to watch what he did and the perfect timing that he seemed to have established with JT Barrett, it is really, really a wonderful thing for the Buckeyes going forward and something that defensive coordinators have to really be nervous about going ahead.
Well, and you're right, Bob. We were waiting to see who would be the go-to receiver. And now that we think we know who it is after that one game, you'll be anxious to see if he draws extra attention and who else that might open it up for, maybe on the other side of the field. But I think the thing we learned from that game was that this is a team that, you know, despite their perceived youth, they can be a very focused basketball football team. I say that while I'm standing in a basketball practice facility. they had a 90-minute lightning delay to get everything started, but they were able to, you know, put the right kind of focus to deal with that. They, you know, dealt with being on a road in a hostile environment, going up against a team that presented more of a physical challenge than any of their first two opponents did. And being able to kind of, once they took control of the game, really close it out. They didn't let things like Joe Mixon's kickoff return. They didn't let, you know, like Oklahoma's scores late in the game. That kind of changed the momentum. So once they were kind of able to get things going the way they wanted to, they were able to keep pushing forward. So I think that's probably what we learned about this football team.
We're talking to Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. You hear him all the time right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket on game day, and, of course, each Thursday right here during the season on the Extravaganza. So a really great find, obviously, for Urban Meyer, if it is indeed a find, if that's what you want to call it. Maybe he knew. Maybe Noah Brown already knew. But for everybody else, it was certainly a great find. What else did we learn about the offense, especially the quick strike capabilities when you've got guys – and we talked all, you know, training camp long about, you know, how they're going to, you know, figure out who carries the ball. Mike Weber ended up winning the starting job, if you will, and is going to carry it the most times. But Curtis Samuel, we knew that he was a weapon, knew that he was going to be a dangerous guy, and it's just a matter of in what circumstances he was going to get the ball and do his very special things. I guess maybe the question here is, after all of that, is how multifaceted is this offense and kind of compared to some of the great offenses we've seen in the last couple of years for this team?
Well, I think it can be very, Bob. You know, and that's even considering the fact they really haven't used the tight end all of that much. But Curtis Samuel has certainly shown that he can be an X factor, you know, making things happen, either running the ball or catching passes out of the backfield. I think we've seen that this receiver group, other than Noah Brown, maybe they haven't set the world on fire with a lot of stats, but they've kind of upheld a little bit of that downfield blocking trend that we saw when you had guys like Evan Spencer here. I think we've seen that Mike Weber is a very decisive north-south running back. He's a guy that, you know, knock on wood, he's taken care of the football pretty well so far. He's a guy that kind of gives him a little bit of a different dimension than what Curtis Samuel gives him. So I think, and you know, and then that's without even discussing all of the things that JT Barrett brings to the table. So I think that this offense does continue to display that it can do an awful lot of things. And let's not forget that this offensive line to date has really kind of held their own when it's come to either pass protecting or being able to create the openings for the running backs to take the ball upfield.
Yeah, no question about that. And let's talk about the defensive side before we continue on to this Rutgers matchup. And as you can tell, I'm not really looking forward to a whole lot of predictions and breaking down of the X's and O's of Rutgers. I think the Buckeyes are in a pretty good position there. But looking back to Norman, and again, what we learned about the defense, the way they were able to I don't know if I will say frustrate Baker Mayfield. He's obviously kind of a chance taker anyway at quarterback. You know, he's a very dynamic player, but I feel like what Ohio State was able to do to him early frustrated him into trying to make some plays that weren't there later, and it's what led to a couple of picks. And just the overall way they were able to control what is supposed to be a very, very explosive Oklahoma offense.
Well, I think what they were able to do early on was frustrate Oklahoma offensively. You know, the tip pass by Jalen Holmes that results in the interception that gets returned for a touchdown, the eventual pressure they were able to get on Baker Mayfield. And, you know, the biggest concern about him is that he's a guy that he's athletic and he uses his feet to extend plays, not necessarily by and large to be a running threat, but to keep plays alive. And Ohio State was able to, you know, somewhat contain him. Yeah, he got his plays. They were able to make their movement. But, you know, I think what we've seen from this defense is the continued rotation of guys up front that are doing what you want the defensive line to do, and that's to create pressure on the passer to try and, you know, for the most part, bottle up Oklahoma's running game. But, you know, this defensive secondary just continues to play at an amazing level. Their athleticism when it comes to covering people, their ability to take the football away, and then after they do that, to be able to score. You know, and Urban Meyer even talked today. His concern now is that secondary, they don't get too overly greedy and get undisciplined when they're covering pass routes. So, you know, I think that this defense is one that really has kind of seized the opportunity and taken advantage of, you know, the secondary taking advantage of the pass pressure, the defensive line taking advantage of the coverage the secondary's put on, and, you know, continuing to get steady play out of their linebackers and especially Raekwon McMillan. So it's been really a good sign through games what this defense as a whole has done.
No question about it. Paul Keels is our guest. He is the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. Looking back at what happened now almost 2 weeks ago at Norman, Oklahoma. By the way, what does it say about Urban Meyer and his confidence in his team to even schedule that game? And I don't know how far in advance it was scheduled, but, you know, they don't need to go to Oklahoma and play one of the best coaches, Bob Stoops, one of the best programs in the country, in the fourth week of the season. They didn't need, or third week of the season, or whatever. Yeah, third week. They didn't need to do that. You know, look at Michigan. They have Hawaii, UCF, and Colorado non-conference before they get into their conference schedule. And that's not to knock the Wolverines, but that's a challenge and a test that they did not have to undertake. Why do you suppose that is something Urban wanted to do? Is that the midseason test that they wanted to have, or he wanted them to have, to prepare them for a potential and maybe inevitable playoff, you know, positioning? Or what does it say about him that they went to Norman?
Well, that was scheduled long before Urban got here. So and Urban really doesn't generally get involved in the scheduling part of it. But, you know, football is done so far in advance. And, you know, I think that it was one of those, they hadn't played Oklahoma since 1983. So remember, this was scheduled at a time, I want to say it's 10 to 12 years that that's been on the books. But
is
this
really
was something.
Long?
Yes, yes. Most of these are, especially the ones that are home and home. The ones that come later are the ones where you're trying to get people to come home only. But, you know, that was done when we were still dealing with the BCS system. But I think that kind of still plays the same as it does in the playoff system here, is that you need to be able to have, in most years, a prime non-conference game, whether it's home or away, and ideally it's going to be both. That is going to show what you can do, test your football team. It's going to show to those who make the decisions, whether it's for the playoffs or the BCS, what you can do to display value in your football team in that particular year. I think what really worked out well for Ohio State, especially with this team this year, is the fact that they were able to play two home games before they went to Oklahoma. You know, some of those years when you had those kind of games as season openers without a game prior to it, there's still a lot of questions you have about your own football team. Next year, I think it's either the second or the third game when Oklahoma comes here. So, but you know, it's, I mean, if you think about it, after the, I may have them all out of order, but once the Oklahoma series is done, you've got TCU that comes back on, you've got Oregon, you've got Texas. So those things are set way in advance, and usually by the time you get, and that's why, if you remember, Bob, there were people that were criticizing Ohio State playing Cal a few years ago. And at the time the California series was scheduled, you know, they were a top 10 team and they were competing for Pac-10 championships. The same with Virginia Tech. You know, they were a team that obviously had been playing at a better level than they were the 2 years that Ohio State played them. That's some of the peril, if you even want to look at that, when you have to schedule some of these so far out. You don't know what those teams are going to be like by the time you get around to playing them.
That's a great point. You don't even know if it's going to be the same coaching staff, you know, at that point, depending on how.
And in most cases, it isn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Either a team isn't doing as well and a coach got run, or the other, you know, team was exceptional and the coach took a better job someplace, and now you really do have a different type of a matchup. Let's talk about the matchup on Saturday against Rutgers. A very familiar foe, obviously, but, you know, 2-2, not as nearly as talented of a foe as the one you just beat in Norman, Oklahoma. What do you see on Saturday?
Well, Rutgers is a team that in most cases outplayed Iowa, even though they lost to them on Saturday. And you know, the big storyline with Rutgers is they've lost two of their best players to season-ending injuries. Janarian Grant, who has 8 career kick returns for touchdowns, both through kickoffs and punts. He's a dangerous receiver. He's even thrown the touchdown pass this year. He's out for the year with a season-ending injury. They lost one of their starting defensive ends, Quanzo Lambert, to a season-ending injury. It's a team that has shown some improvement defensively. They're one of the tops, if not the top team in the nation, Bob, and I don't have it in front of me, as far as red zone defense. Offensively, they've kind of been a little scattered. They've been a little turnover prone, and also what's happened, they've fallen behind early. They fell behind to Howard, and then had to rattle off 52 unanswered points to win that game. They fell behind 21 points to New Mexico, but came back and won the football game. So they're in transition. Chris Ash in his second year there, they've installed a new offense. even though it's the same starting quarterback from last year. So, yeah, they're going through those growing pains, but they're a little stronger and a little more athletic than what we've seen when Ohio State's played them the last 2 years.
Yeah, and you know, the Chris Ash familiarity is something, you know, people will talk about a little bit. Again, he knows Ohio State very, very well and very intricately. But, again, the players are what the players are, and he's building his program there. What do you think of him and the challenge he's got there at Rutgers? And I ask that, of course, with the Tom Herman story as, you know, the backdrop, the former Buckeye who has just become the hot coaching, you know, the talk of the coaching world, I suppose, especially in light of LSU firing Les Miles. Everybody, at least in terms of the pundits and, you know, the national analysts are saying they got to go and grab Tom Herman. They got to go get him from Houston and bring him down to Baton Rouge. So, you know, you look at former Buckeye assistants and doing extraordinary things. Well, maybe both of those. If you want to comment on Tom Herman, the job he's done at Houston already, and then what Chris Ash is trying to build there at Rutgers.
Well, let's start with Chris Ash. And, you know, he came to Ohio State, was here for 2 years, and I think you really saw the influence that he had on the defensive secondary. And a lot of people felt when he came in, he was on a fast track to a head coaching job. I know he was in the running for the Syracuse job. Rutgers is a tall order. You know, they kind of had been in flux all of last year when Kyle Flood was suspended for part of the year. They'd had a great deal of off-the-field problem before the season even started. And I know there was even some flux in the athletic director position and things like that. That's a struggle. And, you know, their facilities are getting better. But if you're Chris Ash, you want a head coaching job. And he's taken some people with him who spent time at Ohio State. It's an uphill climb, but, you know, he's the kind of guy that people seem to think has a good opportunity in the makings to maybe get that program to be competitive. Tom Herman's situation was similar to Chris Ash. Everybody felt like when Tom Herman was here at Ohio State that he was eventually going to be plucked away. And, you know, I think if you look at what he's done, it's a continuation of the offensive philosophy that he implemented as a co-coordinator here at Ohio State. It's taking advantage of the athletes that he had at Houston. And they really have been able to get some key placed transfers from four-year universities, especially to help them on the defensive side. And they've been able to make a great deal of noise and just play with a great deal of confidence. So I think, you know, Tom Herman is in a great position at Houston. You know, whether or not they get accepted into the Big 12 may have a lot to do with what happens to him in the future. You know, it's one of those things that Tom Herman probably, you know, everybody thought he might leave after last year. I think it was a smart move to stay, not only to get a pay raise, but to maintain some consistency. But he might be one of those guys in a couple of years that might be able to pick a spot when it comes to another coaching opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what he's on the way to doing. He is just you know, climbing in everybody's eyes in terms of his ability and what he has done with that program. And you're right, maybe it is the Big 12. If they get into the Big 12, you know, you're in a Power 5 now, and that's automatically going to bring another pay bump with it as well. And, you know, you're looking, of course, to do what's right for yourself and your family while also achieving the best that you can professionally. I personally, while I think he's done such a wonderful job there, would love to see him in Baton Rouge. I think that's one of the best jobs in the country for the simple fact that you just don't have as much in-state competition in terms of recruiting, you know, some of the great talent down there in the Bayou State. That is a job, and if you're a great player in Louisiana, you know, and you want to stay in state, you're going to LSU. It's something Les Miles took great advantage of, and I could see Tom Herman, you know, potentially doing the same thing.
I think my concern would be if you're a head coach, if you're Tom Herman or somebody else dealing with an administration who at the end of last season thought it was okay to keep the head coach, and then this past week the same administration decides to fire the same head coach. I think LSU's kind of created a minor little obstacle for them to overcome when it comes to that. But Tom Herman is one of the, you know, I think when you've got a young family like he does, a lot of it is going to involve how you feel about your administration, their commitment to your program, where you want to raise your family. You know, Tom's roots are in Texas. They're in California, and he still has roots here in Ohio. So sure. A lot of it's just going to depend on what opportunities there and where he and his young family feel comfortable living as well.
To your LSU point, since you brought it up too, you know, that is one of the striking things about this. They just made a decision after a lot of, you know, a lot of conversation and a lot of, you know, a disagreement, I think, among the power brokers there at LSU. They decide to keep Les Miles. And when they did make the decision to fire him, as you know well, very well, Paul, it was because of 1 second. I mean, you know, they scored a game-winning touchdown, and they, you know, and apparently they said the clock had hit zero, so it didn't count. If they have one more second, they win that game, and they're certainly not firing their coach after a victory. You just wonder, what does the future hold? Is it, if they lose next week, do they fire after that one? If they, you know, is it in week 9? I mean, was he just one loss away from being fired after being, being given the proverbial, show of public support when they kept him on in the offseason?
It just seems, Bob, that in most cases, and certainly there are exceptions, but in most cases, making a change in the middle of the season is not a good thing. It kind of throws up the white flag. It has, you know, and we kind of saw what had happened here in 2011 with some of the assistants under Luke Fickell, wondering what was going to happen to them. You know, they're job searching while they're also trying to coach the football team. So you've got a coaching staff down there at LSU. They don't know what's going to happen. They don't know if that Ogeron's going to keep that job or not. So, and certainly the same has to filter down to the players too. They've got to decide, do they want to stay? Do they want to look at transferring? It's just, it just seems as though at times it's a knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah, I think that's very, very true. And that knee has been jerking though several times over the last couple of years
for
folks down there. You know, and that's why, of course, there was such consternation about what to do in the offseason. And finally, they just decided to pull the trigger. Hey, Paul, before you run, Clemson, Louisville. What a battle between Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson. It's in Death Valley. Who do you like?
I haven't watched enough of Clemson this year to really have a great idea. I guess I would tend to want to take Clemson since it's a home game for them, but anxious to see how that plays out. That really is one that looks like it'll tell us a lot about whether Louisville is a contender or a pretender.
No question about it. I think that's going to be a great game, as is the top 10 showdown between number 8 Wisconsin and number 4 Michigan. Paul, always appreciate your time. Thank you so much. I know you're busy with basketball. You know, I introduced you as the voice of all things Scarlet and Gray, not having any idea you were doing basketball work today as well. but obviously it worked out very well. So thanks so much for finding the time for us, Paul.
No, you got it, Bob. Take care.
Have a great day. There you go. Paul Keels, voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, literally in all things, football and basketball, obviously, was in the middle of both duties when we pulled him from those right here onto the airwaves. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take some more time to talk about Ohio State, specifically how you can represent your Buckeye gear, and then we're going to take a time out for a sports center. Want to tell you about the Buckeye Store and More. If you are not yet or have not yet visited the Buckeye Store and More, then you haven't visited your heaven. Seriously, if you're an Ohio State fan and you love Scarlet and Gray, you feel like it's nirvana when you walk into the college and pro superstore known as the Buckeye Store and More in Sylvania. They've got hundreds of new Nike products in stock representing the Buckeyes, and they are bringing hundreds of new products in literally every day. It's the largest store in Ohio dedicated to Buckeye gear, whether it's gear you want to wear or you want to decorate with. Maybe it's memorabilia, keepsakes, whatever it is you're looking for. You can decorate the kitchen, the dining room, the man cave, the bedroom, the car, the cubicle, the garage, virtually all of it with items at the Buckeye Store and More. You're going to love it. 10% store-wide savings right now at the Buckeye Store and More. 50 to 75% savings on doorbuster items. Select items each and every day. Get there early to the Buckeye Store and More. And oh, by the way, I can already hear you saying, I don't like Ohio State. Why would I go there? Well, because you're going to find what you like there no matter what. Fan zones for the Maize and Blue, Wolverines, for the Fighting Irish, the Spartans, the Rockets, the Falcons, and yes, even baseball's Tigers, all there at the Buckeye Store and More. In Sylvania, 5700 Monroe, Starlight Plaza, the Buckeye Store and More, the College and Pro Superstore.
Now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Back indeed at 4:39. We got Drive Time coming your way in 21 minutes with Mr. Mike Miller. Stay exactly where you are right now when 5 o'clock comes around. Phone lines are open now, too, to 866-240-1065. You know, Jim, it's interesting because I was asking Paul about the scheduling of Oklahoma and, you know, why Urban Meyer would have wanted to do that. And
right.
Why Bob Stoops would have wanted to do that. And he pointed out that oftentimes, and in fact, most of the time, these things are done 10 to 12 years in advance, potentially. I didn't think that it was that long. I mean, for example, one of the news stories we've had today, Bowling Green is scheduled to face Notre Dame at Notre Dame in 2019. We heard the same thing about Toledo going to Notre Dame in
21, I think.
21. So that's 5 years in advance. I didn't know they were that far out.
To
be honest with you. But one thing we can say, to the point that I was asking Paul about, is that Bob Stoops was sure as heck around when that was scheduled.
Yep.
He had to sign off on that because Stoops has been in Oklahoma since 1999.
Yep.
Which, by the way, I didn't realize it had been that long.
I kind of thought it would be longer. I'm a little surprised it's not longer, but yeah, I guess that does sound about right.
Well, how old were you in 1999?
I would have been 18.
Okay. See, to me, I remember Bob Stoops from Florida. You know, I mean, I'm not looking at this in maybe the same way you are, and maybe it's because of our ages, but Bob Stoops was not always Oklahoma. In fact, when he went to Oklahoma, I was a little bit, I don't want to say surprised by it, but it was just such a change because he was the head coach he was the assistant head coach at Florida, defense coordinator there, and was one of the hot coaching prospects back in the late 1990s before he went to Oklahoma. And when he took over there, I kind of felt like it was just, you know, a few years ago. 17 of them.
Yeah.
I that blows my mind. 17 years he's been the head coach at Oklahoma, and I still remember him working at Florida, you know, under Spurrier. And he was a great, you know, promising coach, obviously. He's made it to a bowl game in each of his years. He's 8-9 only, and this is one of the knocks on Bob Stoops. 8-9 in bowl games in his 17 years at Oklahoma. And, he does have the one national championship in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
To my point, even if this thing was scheduled 10 years ago or 12 years ago, whatever the case might be, or maybe if it was only 6 years ago, I really don't know. Bob Stoops sure as heck knew what he was doing when he was bringing Ohio State into Norman. And I just thought it was a salute to both of those guys that they both agreed, you know what,
yeah,
let's do this. Let's bring it on. Knowing full well that the loser of that game, since there are no ties, will go to overtime. Knowing the full well that the loser of that game very well could knock themselves out of what at the time this was scheduled to be was a BCS championship opportunity.
Right.
Or now, of course, that we know as a CFP, College Football Playoff championship opportunity. I just thought it was pretty gutsy for two of the biggest names to schedule this, when they really didn't have to. Paul Keels, of course, is spot on when he says most of the top programs have to schedule one big time or prime time type opponent per off season.
Just going to bring
schedule.
That part up, yeah. That
they do, but they're not always that challenging. Again, Urban going to Norman and Norman inviting Urban, or you know, even if Urban wasn't the head coach, and this is what year for Urban? 5, 6? For Urban Meyer.
Six, I think.
So again, I don't know when this thing was signed. But it is quite an accepting of a challenge for those two guys to face off with one another, in week number three like that.
Yeah, and that is part of the interesting thing when we're talking about college football at the in these out of conference schedulings for the top type programs, your power conference programs. We saw it during the BCS, but I think we're even seeing it more right now in how the committee is evaluating. They get your conference play. Even in a situation where, hey, Big Ten, you got to play 9 conference games, so you only have 3 games left on the schedule to do whatever with. It's becoming, somebody is trying to drill it into these guys. Hey, at least one of your out of conference games needs to be against a fellow power conference team.
See, and that's okay. And back before the conferences became so packed, you know what I mean? Where mm-hmm. they had, like, when the Big Ten was actually
10 teams,
not 14. You know, when you had regular size conferences, when the Big Eight was 8 teams, when the Pac-10 was the Pac-10, and on down the line, and you didn't have the championship game,
yeah,
you know, the conference championship game and that sort of thing, it certainly made more sense because you had a lot more non-conference dates to fill.
Yep.
And you're gonna schedule the other powers. That's why for so many years in a row you had Michigan and Notre Dame going
mm-hmm.
at it. And I get all of that, but once the conference has expanded the way they have, and 9 of your 12 games are going to be against conference opponents, you only have 3 outside. You generally speaking don't see, or you don't have to see, I guess I should say, you know, the biggest, baddest program scheduling one another, knowing that the loser is going to be essentially knocked out of the championship hunt by the time they get into their conference season.
Yeah, and the other thing, of course, being brought up here when we're talking about these out-of-conference games, whether you're scheduling a big boy or not, yeah, you do have to schedule them far enough out in advance because there's only a few dates available. And you brought up the Cal example. When that was scheduled, Cal was kind of hanging around as a top 10 team. It's like,
yeah,
Ooh, here's a good matchup against a Pac-12 type team. By the time the game actually took place, Cal had more or less fallen apart. To that end, perfect example. 2023-2024, first at the Shoe in 23, then on the road in 2024 at Boston College. Well, are they still going to be a 3-9 ACC team, or are they going to be like those couple years where they had Matt Ryan and they were losing ACC title games?
Right.
You don't know, because that's 7-8 years from now.
Yeah, you don't know who the coaches are going to be or anything. Well,
that's just one example.
I'll give you another example. Excuse me. With Alabama, you know, they routinely schedule Western Kentucky's, you know, these kinds of teams.
Mm-hmm.
Kent State, they just hammered Kent State. No knock on the Golden Flashes, obviously, to go down there in Tuscaloosa and lose 48-0. But they schedule those teams, and their excuse is, well, you know, we have such a huge challenge in front of us in the SEC that we deserve to schedule some lesser opponents in our non-conference schedule. There's no sense in overtesting ourselves. Later on, they'll play Chattanooga, you know, which is another one on November 19th before the matchup with Auburn.
So that's the one criticism, by the way, real quick on how the SEC does it. The Big Ten is old school. You play all your out of conference, then the rest of the season is in conference. The SEC is messed up. I've seen in recent years some SEC teams opening the season with a conference game, so they get this weird November date that most of them throw in their 1AA cream puff, where teams like Ohio State would play them on opening day. That's how you get a November 19th. Alabama will be crushing Chattanooga, and it feels all kinds of wrong.
Yeah, it does. And it's not just, it's not just that, though. You know, look at already they've played Mississippi, or Ole Miss, I should say. You know, that's the other thing. You look at Alabama, they played USC to start, Western Kentucky, then Ole Miss, which is a huge challenge in a team, of course, they've had, you know, that's had,
they've had their problems with, yeah.
And then they come back to non-conference with Kent State, you know, a team that they know they have a pretty good chance of whooping up on.
Yep.
So, you know, when you look at it that way, it is kind of strange how they'll play a conference game very early on in the first three and then have non-conference foes scheduled in weeks 9 or 10 or something like that. It is kind of weird how the SEC has done it. But the point I was going to make with Alabama, by the way, is, USC, when they scheduled that probably 6 to 8 years ago, and I still don't know if it's 10 or 12, and maybe it is. You know, Paul was kind of...
It depends when the phone calls are made, really.
Yeah. But it does matter, because 6 years ago, USC was different than they were 12 years ago. And
right.
They're certainly different than they are today. And maybe 6 years ago or 10 years ago or 12 years ago, when it was Pete Carroll and still, you know, dominating college football out there by cheating and illegally recruiting and giving benefits to players' parents like Reggie Bush, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe then when that deal was signed, it was like, all right, we're going to have a season opening showdown. We're going to go September 3rd, Saturday, September 3rd out in 2016, USC and Alabama and both schools, Saban and Carroll. All right, let's do this thing. Well, lo and behold, here we are.
Yeah.
And it's a very different USC team in kind of a state of transition, a state of flux, and it's 52-6 Bama. So,
right.
You know, and it's not as much of a challenge as it was. So it may look a lot different by the time you play, obviously, as it did, or than it did when you scheduled the game.
Yeah, and that's why when I look at some of these, mostly because of that factor, because you don't know if the power conference team you schedule, again, use the Ohio State Cal example for one, you don't know when the game actually gets to kick off, if it's still going to be the sexy matchup when the phone calls between ADs were being made, maybe as far out in advance as a decade, maybe in advance. This is why, you know, deep down, and there's no way for the NCAA or other entity or the college football playoff to enforce this, but I've noticed they kind of nudge teams in this kind of direction. And what I'd like to see, and we'll use an Ohio State, you know, as an example here, because some conferences, like, for example, the SEC is still 8 conference games. ACC is 8, so you'd have 4 out of conference. I'm not dealing with that. We'll take Ohio State or even Michigan for an example, where you get 3 out of conference games. What I'd like to see, and again, there's no way anyone could actually enforce this, but what I'd like to see is you have 3 out of conference games. All of them have to be against 1A opponents. No more of this 1AA stuff. No more. I don't care how much money they give. We, you know, the example of my report, Notre Dame's going to be paying Bowling Green $1.1 million.
Right.
I don't care. We're not doing that for your North Dakota States again. You know, we're done. One of the 3 should be against a fellow power conference opponent. And again, as we mentioned, there's not much you can do about how the teams will actually look when they take the field maybe 6, 8, 10 years later.
No, but they've got to be in a Power 5
But it's
conference.
Got to be a Power 5 conference. No more 1AA. So if you're somebody like Ohio State, okay, go schedule an Oklahoma and schedule a couple MAC teams. I mean, that's kind of what I mean. If you're a power conference team, the 2 things you should do, whether it's 3 or 4 out-of-conference games, one should be against a fellow power conference opponent and no 1AA schools. If somebody were to find a way to make that a rule and enforce it, I'd be all in favor of it.
And by 1AA, of course, you still mean FCS.
You know what? The heck with their moniker changes. I will always refer to it as 1AA.
I do, too. I've always, you know, I'm very, very reticent and hesitant to change those things, too. I like Division 1, Division 1AA, Division 2, and Division 3. That's the way the NCAA has always been. It's what it was when I played in it, and it's what I want to refer to it as. But I just feel like, you know, I'm that dinosaur if I don't start talking about it in the same vernacular as everybody else. Because you know what I do? I end up interviewing a guy like Paul Keels, who knows everything about the game and, you know, is bought in, especially as a broadcaster, a play-by-play broadcaster, the way he is. He's got to refer to things by what they are, FBS, FCS, et cetera.
Yes, yes.
So I found myself as a talk show host feeling like, I guess I got to start using the same language that they do, or else I'm going to sound like I'm the one who's either not up to speed on it or is being difficult for the sake of being difficult. So anyway, now to the issue you bring up, though, about FCS schools and you know, you talk about North Dakota State's, for example.
That's just the first name that popped in my head, but they're the worst example because they're easily the best one.
But they're looking for the same opportunity that, like, you know, a Bowling Green is here by taking $1.1 million to go to Notre Dame,
mm-hmm.
you know, and get beat up probably. I mean, it's not a guarantee. Obviously, look at what Toledo did up in Michigan in the Big House. It's not a guarantee that a MAC school being fed, if you will, to Alabama the way Kent State just was last week, you know, in Tuscaloosa, that it's, you know, it's not a guarantee. But it's a pretty good odds. Notre Dame isn't paying them $1.1 million to come up there and beat them. They're paying them $1.1 million to come up there so that they can beat on them and get ready for bigger and bigger things. Okay? And those schools need that money. BG isn't going to draw. BG isn't going to draw the kind of revenues, obviously. You know, playing, even though they draw TV money from playing, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday nights, whenever the, you know, whenever the networks want to have MAC teams on, the MAC is
those are usually Tuesday, Wednesdays, but.
Well, but you understand my point. You know, there's games pretty much, you know, six, seven days a week now. College games. Well, six, I guess, not on Sundays. Because of the mid-major schools or smaller schools and conferences that need that money, and they'll play whenever they tell them TV is on the phone, and they want you to start playing on Thursdays or Tuesdays or Wednesdays, even though it completely jacks up your practice schedules and completely jacks up your routines as far as game preparation. You're doing it because the money is there.
Yep.
They need that money. So I guess.
Not to mention the exposure. A school like a MAC, that's the only way they can get an exclusive national game. Exactly. You're not going to get that through the crowdedness of a Saturday.
I would say the same thing is true about some of those FCS programs. And that's the reason I question your, you know, hard line on that, you know, about no more FCS schools, you know, playing these big time programs.
To me, it's a power conference rule. I don't think I would have a Toledo or a Bowling Green in the MAC or an Arkansas State in the Sun Belt have that same rule. If they want, in fact, I've thought about this in the past. If you're one of the mid classification mid majors, like where a Toledo and a Bowling Green are, okay, you could still schedule an FCS school once every two seasons. I mean, I just think this needs to be cut down a little bit because, again, think of it from a power conference perspective. Mm-hmm. What's the difference playing Chattanooga versus playing Eastern Michigan? Not much on the final scoreboard, and you're still giving them money.
Right.
Well, yeah, at least play the team that's in the same classification.
Same level.
You know what I mean? Especially if you're a power conference team. Yeah, I guess I'd be willing to give a little more leeway in that kind of scheduling for a mid-major school like a Bowling Green or a Toledo. But even then, I'd want to encourage once every 2 years only.
Yeah, that is reasonable to say once every 2 years only. That is fine. And I also like the idea that you do talk about playing somebody from a Power Five conference, but then that still doesn't really do a lot. And the reason why is because, well, in order to meet the obligation, if it came down to that, yeah, we'll schedule somebody from the Big Ten, a Power Five conference. Hi, Rutgers, ring, ring, ring. Will you come and play us? Hey, Maryland. Hey, I don't know who have been the little sisters of the poor recently.
Always got Purdue.
Purdue.
They're still here and still
Minnesota
stinking.
In many years, if not every year. So you're still, you know, okay, hey, we're going to play a Power Five conference.
Well, everybody's got a conference drag. I mean, somebody's got to play Kansas in football.
But that's my point. You know, if you say, hey, we're meeting our Power Five non-conference obligation by playing Vanderbilt from the SEC, what have you really done? To me, I would rather play somebody in a MAC, you know, type of a conference or, you know, a top, you know, FCS type program or 1AA program and give them the opportunity because it's going to be just as much of a challenge as Vanderbilt.
You know where the twisted,
you know, the bottom dwellers of the SEC.
You know where the twisted reverse of this comes in?
No.
Where you're saying, oh, but you get a Vanderbilt or a Kansas or somebody football. Here's where the reverse comes in to the benefit of a mid-major. Remember that couple years ago when Northern Illinois made the Orange Bowl and everyone threw a hissy fit about it?
Yeah.
Well, part of the reason they went is they beat their power school opponent, which for a MAC school is always going to be on the road, right? But you know who they played that year? They got Minnesota, who was horrible. That's right. That's the reverse of it, too, that can help a mid-major, you know, in a way. And I don't know. I mean, yes, that's probably how a couple schools here and there would try to skirt around that if this kind of rule were ever to be put in place.
Yeah. There's no doubt they would. I mean, come on. You know, they're not going to...
But at the same time, the message are being sent. You know, it can't just be your conference schedule. We need to, you need to play some big boy out of league, too, because they factor those things in. And I think as we keep going in the playoff, whether it's four or, God willing, they increase it to eight, you'll still have that dynamic.
Yeah, and it'll happen sooner rather than later. I really do. I think we're only a couple of years away from it. I really, really do. Because they're starting to see where things are with the Final Four that they come to. And you're going to have five or six or seven teams that really deserve it. And they're going to expand. Plus, they're going to see the most important thing. It's not about competitiveness. It's about what? Revenue!
Money!
And how much more money can you cha-ching your way out of a Final Eight as opposed to a Final Four? And that is where it's headed. All right, great conversation. Enjoyed it. Great callers, great guests. Paul Keels, Nick Baumgartner, thanks so much. Stay where you are. The next name I'll say will be the man who's going to take you through the drive time hour. That's Mike Miller coming up next. Kush, you're in for Mike?
I'm in for Mike today, yes. He's on hockey Kush assignment.
Kush is in for Mike Miller. Sorry about that. But still, it's still Mike Miller's drive time, hosted today by Jim Cushland. Stay where you are. It's coming up next on The Ticket.
What? Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep their trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.